It's a good thing to be here. Greetings in the name of Jesus. You can turn in your Bibles to John chapter 9 and for the text today. And I would like to read something that sparked my interest here in this passage of Scripture. It's from a little different perspective from what we often hear it. I came across this week, and the title is Dirt Blind. Jesus could have just spoken a word, but he chose to give him a dirty miracle. This is one of the most uncomfortable scenes in the Gospels. The man has been blind since the day he took his first breath. He can't see the disciples' faces, but he can hear their gossips. And that is one of the most disturbing things of being blind. You hear everything. They don't ask for his name or even offer a piece of silver. To them, he's a logic puzzle, a theological case study. They point a finger right in front of his unseeing face and ask Jesus, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" To them, someone had to be at fault. Can you imagine sitting in the dirt, feeling the heat of the sun, while these holy men turn your lifelong suffering into a debate topic? They didn't care if he was hungry. They just wanted to know who to blame. But Jesus doesn't play that game. He looks at the man and doesn't see a sin problem. He sees the possibility of God being glorified. Then Jesus did something that defies all logic. He didn't snap his fingers or do some clean, dignified preacher move from 10 feet away. No, he spit on the ground, knelt in the dust, mixed his own saliva into a thick, gritty paste, and smeared it on the man's eyes. It was gross. It was weird. It looked like a total failure of a miracle. And then Jesus just says, "Go wash." No instant fix, just a long, awkward walk. Imagine him stumbling through the city, still blind, mud on his eyes. Jesus said, "Go wash." Wet mud caked on his eyes. People are laughing. Children are pointing. Humiliation doesn't stop. It was actually part of the process. He had to walk through the dark, trusting a voice he'd heard exactly, probably only once, as far as we know. But when that water hit his face, his eyes, he wiped it off, the world exploded into color. He didn't just see the trees. He saw the face of a God who wasn't too holy to get spit on his hands for him. See, we're always begging for the clean miracle. We want the poof, it's gone moment. No mess, no hassle, just a quick fix. But sometimes God answers with mud. He puts you in a spot that feels embarrassing. He asks you to keep walking when you look like a fool to everyone watching. He lets the neighbors gossip while you're still blind. Don't wipe the mud off yet. Keep walking toward the water. People are going to talk. They'll say you're getting what you deserve. They'll mock your faith and ask why a good God would let you suffer like this. Let them talk. Let them turn your life into a debate. Jesus is intentional. He doesn't waste a single drop of spit or a single grain of sand. The mess isn't a mistake. It's the raw material for your miracle. Are we going to listen to the voices asking who sinned? Or are we going to listen to the voice that says, "Go and wash"? Let's read our passage here. Or at least, I think what I'm going to do today is just go through it piece by piece and look at what is written here in the Scriptures. I would like to go back to a few verses before chapter 9 and read those. I think I'll start in verse 54. Jesus answered, "If I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father who honors me, of whom you say that he is your God." He's speaking to the Jews there. And he says, "Yet you have not known him, and I know him. And if I say I do not know him, I shall be a liar like you. But I do know him and keep his word. Your father, Abraham, rejoiced to see my day. And he saw it and was glad." That's so interesting because he said, "Your father, Abraham, rejoiced to see my day. And he saw it and was glad." That means Abraham was still living at this time, even though he was in paradise watching this, what was happening. Then the Jews said to him, "You're not yet 50 years old. Have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Most assuredly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." Then they took up stones to throw at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. So here he was. He had had this interaction with the Jews, and he said, "Before Abraham was, I am." Now, the next verse says, "As Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?'" The disciples saw a man who could not see. The disciples' biggest question was, whose sin caused this man not to be able to see? We get really good at diagnosing problems in people. We give those problems all kinds of fancy names. But the question really is, how does this problem get solved? You know, we look at people and say, "Oh, they've got this problem," and we put a name on it. "They've got this problem," put a name on it. "They've got this problem." But we're not getting anywhere in the same way that Jesus got somewhere here. Reading on verse 3, Jesus answered, "No, it wasn't this man or his parents that sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him." Jesus saw a man in whom God could work. Verse 4, he says, "I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." There he uses that word, "I am." And I love that word, "I am." Jesus says, "I am the light of the world. I am the way, the truth, and the life." And there's many other "I ams" that you find in the scriptures. Jesus was a man under God's authority. It says, "I must work the works of him who sent me." He was a man who was more than just a man, but he was under God's authority. He said, his main focus was to do the work that God had called him to do. If you go to Isaiah chapter 42, I'm going to read Isaiah 42, 5 to 7. It says this, thus says God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread forth the earth and that which comes from it, who gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk on it. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness and will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the peoples, as a light to the Gentiles. Verse 7, to open blind eyes, to bring out prisoners from the prison, those who sit in darkness from the prison house. I am the Lord. That is my name, and my glory I will not give to another, nor my praise to carved images. God is the Lord who is here, who sent Jesus to open the eyes of the blind so that they can see. And it's not just physical eyes that were meant to see. The problem here was the Jews could not, they didn't have their eyes open. And as we'll see later in the chapter here, that's what Jesus was more concerned about than opening the eyes of this blind man. But he used the physical to come to a spiritual understanding, for us to be able to come to a spiritual understanding. So, in Jesus was light, and that light was the light of men. It says, as long as I am the world, I am the light of the world. While he was here, he was the light of the world. People came from all over just to hear him speak, just to see what he's doing. Now, in verse 6, we'll go on to verse 6. He says, when he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. One little verse. But how would it feel if you were the blind man? How would it feel to have this man who you'd maybe never seen? Because it says here, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And it was almost like that was just a happenstance that he came through past this man who was blind from birth. But the purpose that Jesus had on this earth was to actually be in about his Father's business. And being about his Father's business didn't keep him back and keep him away from the people that... But he literally, when he saw the man blind from birth, he got his hands dirty. He went down. And it reminds me of the very beginning when God created the heavens and the earth, and then when he created man, what did God do? He literally got down and he made man out of the dust of the earth. And this is just a reminder that we're made of the dust. All of us are just made of the gritty stuff out there. If we die and our bodies go back, they'll go back to dust. Literally. I've already come across the worth of what we are actually worth, and it's not that much when you take the amount of minerals and the amount of all the different articles that we're made of. It's not worth that much. It's just dust. But what God can do with dust is absolutely amazing. Never underestimate the power of our God. Jesus said, I am, I exist as the light of the world. Jesus' purpose was to do the works of God in the physical creation. Now, what is your purpose? What is my purpose? Jesus had a purpose. What is my purpose? What is your purpose? What is the purpose for us as a church here? Is it just to come together and talk about the Bible and talk about how we should act and then go home and do our own thing? Or is it about how we should take what's living, powerful in here and put it into our everyday walk of life so that when we see a need, I mean, I apologize for this illustration, but I was sitting at my desk and all at once I saw a man walk past our window, and both his arms were all dirty. And I said, happens to be the man who's sitting here. But I said, so what's going on? Oh, I had my hand down in the sewer. I was trying to clean out the sewage out of this, and it was time to get cleaned up. And it wasn't, he didn't want to go inside the shop, so he came to our house where he knew there was an outside hose, and he washed the dirt off his hands. And those are the kinds of things that, now he wasn't necessarily taking care of the eyes of the blind or anything like that, but he was getting down and doing dirty work because that's just a part of what we need to do sometimes. And I love to see when people are willing to do that kind of thing, because that's the kind of thing that makes the world work, when we aren't too good not to do those kinds of things. Jesus did not hesitate to get down in the dirt and use the basic elements of what Adam and Eve were made from to heal this man's eyes. Let's keep on going here. Verse 7, and he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Now, in the little thing that I read in the beginning here, it says he came and the first person he saw was Jesus. I don't really think that was quite accurate. I think he went, he washed, he saw, and then now he's going to go back. And can you imagine, he knew how to go before, because blind people kind of know which way to turn. Now, all at once, I can imagine that he could have been a little confused, because now all these things are hitting him, all this, the visuals that we see all the time. He wasn't going by his memory anymore. He had to try to think, oh, I didn't know that was there. I didn't know. He just knew the route to go. But he got back to where he was before. And it doesn't say that Jesus was there. In fact, I don't think Jesus was there anymore. Because as we keep going, we'll read it. We'll notice. He says, therefore the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, is not this the man that was sat and was begging? Some said, oh yeah, that's he. Others said, he is like him. He said, I am he. Therefore they said to him, how were your eyes opened? He answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and I received my sight. Then they said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. So here he was back to the neighbors, and he was becoming a missionary to the neighbors. Isn't that what happens when our eyes get opened? Truly, when our eyes are opened, then we start becoming missionaries. I think that's really an important point. They brought him who formerly was blind. So he said, I don't know where Jesus is, but they brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Now, here are some facts that are interesting. Now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. He said to them, he, Jesus, put clay on my eyes, and I washed and I see. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. Here they again made a theological debate out of a healing that took place. They tried to figure out how'd this happen? Somehow they completely missed the fact that this was a tremendous miracle they had probably never ever seen a miracle like that before. And here he was, a man who was able to see, and they were trying to decide if Jesus was a righteous man or not. And their conclusion was that he's a sinner. They said, "This man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath." And they said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division. So they talked to the blind man, say, "What do you say about him because he opened your eyes?" So the blind man said to them, "He is a prophet." Now, he is a prophet. He's something more than just your run-of-the-mill person. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. They asked him, saying, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered them and said, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but by what means he now sees we do not know, or who opened his eyes we do not know. He is of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself." I mean, so he must have been an older man already. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews. This was a very strong religious organization, and they were worried about being thrown out. They were worried about being accepted in this religious group of people. They said the Jews had already agreed that if anyone confessed that he, Jesus, was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. And that's the reason the parents said, "He is of age, ask him." So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, "Give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner." Now, tell me, how does this work? Here the man, he was actually healed. And they want him to forget the means by which he was healed. They want him to just say, "God, I give you glory for healing me." We don't know about this other person. We don't know about Jesus who did it, but you have to give God the glory. And then the man answered and said, "Well, whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see." Then they said to him again, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I told you already, you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Now, here he is. He's starting to become a missionary. He's saying, "Look, do you really want to become his disciples too?" And then they made fun of him. They reviled him. They said, "You're his disciples, but we're Moses' disciples." See, it goes right back to they were putting themselves back to Abraham. They were putting themselves back to Moses, but they did not want to believe in Jesus. Verse 29, they say, "We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he is from." The man answered and said to them, "Why? This is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he's from, yet he's opened my eyes." The old saying, the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in what actually happened. And somehow they want to go around Jesus, and they don't want to give Jesus the glory. He said, because they had already marked him down as being a sinner. Why did they mark him down as being a sinner? What did he do wrong? He knelt down. He worked with mud and clay. And he worked on the Sabbath. And that is what made him, in their eyes, a sinner. He says, "Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him." See, they had things right. If anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. But then they say, "Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind." This is the man speaking. The man answered and said, "Why, this is a marvelous thing. Do you not know where he's from? Yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him." This was the man speaking. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was blind. If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. Now the Jews said, you are completely born in sins, and are you teaching us? And then they cast him out of the synagogue. So now what's he going to do? Now he's being able to see. He has his eyes, but he's no longer a part of the religious. They cast him out. Do you think that he ever wished that he could just be blind again? At least he was accepted. I don't know. I don't think so. Let's keep reading. Now Jesus comes back into this situation. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, do you believe in the Son of God? Sometimes, in this case, he had to be cast out of the synagogue before he was ready to accept the new truth, because he had his physical eyes opened. But now Jesus wants to open his spiritual eyes. He says, do you believe in the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you. Then he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. This is the point where all of us need to come to. This is the point where his spiritual eyes now were opened. First, he had his physical eyes opened, but that wasn't the main point of what Jesus was after. Jesus wanted him to also have his spiritual eyes. First, he had his physical eyes, and now he wants his spiritual eyes opened. Jesus said, for judgment, I have come into this world that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind. Now, this wasn't done just between this man and Jesus, because some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words, and he said to them, are we blind also? Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. What is the main purpose here? What is the main point here? I think that we can get to a point where we think that we see, but we're actually still spiritually blind. And Jesus said, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. And it was pretty clear that they were not seeing Jesus for who he really was. And that was their sin. And my question for me today is, am I seeing Jesus for who he really is? Am I believing Jesus for who he really is? Am I living a life in a way that is honoring to Jesus? Now, this is not the end of this whole story. I'm going to read the rest of this because he goes right into another what we often cut off, we don't think about as part of the story. But he says, most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. There's so much more that could be unpacked out of this part of the scripture that I just read about Jesus being the door of the sheep and Jesus and who he is. But I'm not going to go into that. But the next section as well goes with that. Then Jesus said to them again, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal, to kill, to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming, leaves the sheep, flees, and the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling, does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And laying down his life for the sheep, in this case, meant that he knelt down in front of that man, he made mud, he anointed the man's eyes, but he had more to the story. He wanted the man to see that he was the Christ, the Son of the living God. Verse 16 says, "And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring. They will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd." And I think that we can be counted as some of those other sheep. We are the Gentiles, in generally considered, and we are some of those other sheep. "Therefore my Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down. I have power to take it again. This command I have received from my Father. Therefore, there was a division, again, among the Jews because of these sayings. And many of them said, 'He has a demon and is mad. Why do you listen to him?' Others said, 'These are not the words of one who has a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of a man born blind?'" He's going right back into the reminder that there is a man born blind. And this is all in a day's work, in a sense. First, they were telling him, "You're not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said, "Most assuredly I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." They took up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself, went out of the temple, through the midst of them, passed by, and as he passed by, he saw the man who is blind from birth. And he did that to the man. And then, in verse 35, he comes back to that man and talks about something that's spiritual. "Do you believe in the Son of God?" And that's my question to you today, and to myself. Do I truly believe in the Son of God? Do I believe what Jesus can do? Do I believe what Jesus has done and is doing and will do? And then he talks about the entering of the... We need to enter by the door. That there's no other door. Jesus, there's no other door besides the door that Jesus... And it's so interesting for me today. We had the Sunday school lesson, and we only got through part of Psalm 23. But we had the Sunday school lesson about the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. We had that as our study. And now here we are being reminded that Jesus is our shepherd. He is the door of the sheep. He is the one through whom we can enter. And that is so beautiful. And I like verse 21. It says, "Others said, 'These are not the words of one who has a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?' No. A demon does not open the eyes of the blind. Jesus is the one who opens the eyes of the blind. And I want the focus to be on Jesus today, because he's the one that can open my eyes. He can open my physical eyes and my spiritual eyes. It's more important to have my spiritual eyes open than it is my physical eyes.